Today on National Entrepreneurs Day, I am pleased to announce the launch of the Nano Entrepreneurship Network. My name is Lisa Friedersdorf, and I'm the director of the National Nanotechnology Coordination Office. One of the four goals of the National Nanotechnology Initiative is to foster the transfer of new technologies into products for commercial and public benefit. This network will bring together both the entrepreneurs and those from the ecosystem that support them to establish and grow their companies. The activities of the network will largely be driven by those that are engaged, but we anticipate will include podcasts like the one we have today, webinars, town hall discussions, and workshops that enable us to share best practices from entrepreneurs and the resources that are available to support them. My guest today is Joe Sprengard, founder and CEO of Velo Technologies of Cincinnati, Ohio. Joe, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about you and your company?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. So Velo Technologies is an advanced materials company driven by the needs of the aerospace and defense market. We are located in Cincinnati, Ohio, recently expanded the business. We've got 25 employees, and we're principally focused in two segments of the aerospace composites industry. One is in electrically conductive materials, and the other are really driven by electrothermal heating systems, both of which we leverage nanomaterials in our product line for our customers.
So you mentioned that your work is in the aerospace sector and that you're working in composites. I understand in that sector, qualification of new materials can be quite a challenge. Can you share your experience in that area?
There is no questions. There are lots of challenges. In fact, I sometimes like to tell people, if you really love somebody, don't allow them to start an advanced materials company in aerospace. And I somewhat kidding, but also somewhat serious because of exactly, Lisa, what you're saying, that the timelines are long. However, core to the future of aerospace capabilities is the need for and the development of new advanced material capability. And while it's difficult, great things aren't built because they're easy. And so we're inspired by the challenge. We've had to appropriately structure the business and make sure we are built in such a fashion that we can sustain those long cycles. We are literally celebrating our 10th anniversary as a business next month. And we just experienced our first expansion as an enterprise. So it has taken us that long to go from an idea to what is now truly a manufacturing company, because we are going through exactly what you mentioned around a certification of certain material systems for aerospace platforms. So certainly not quick. Some people like to laugh, you're an overnight success. And of course, that is not the case. That has never, though, deflated our interest or passion towards the purpose of why we exist and what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, congratulations, first of all. And in going back 10 years, was it a technical idea or a market need that you saw? What inspiration led you to become an entrepreneur in this area?
There's really two aspects to my personal interest in the entrepreneurship leap that I took. One was more personal. The other was more technical. The personal part of it was really driven by my family's interest, my wife and me, around the pursuit of impacting generational poverty. And that to us was why starting a company, the vision towards creating great opportunities to build a capability that employed folks was really just a personal passion, because we've just been too close to generational poverty in our life, and it's really frustrating to see. But in terms of how that led to the technology, was somewhat serendipitous. The University of Cincinnati, about that same time that I was looking to make the leap into the entrepreneurship community, had announced a scientific breakthrough related to a nanomaterial. And that breakthrough allowed for the growth of a carbon nanotube, literally the continued growth of a physical structure much beyond what had been accomplished before. I kind of liken it to, if we had a contest in our neighborhood, if we all lived together in the same neighborhood and we were all planting grass seed in our front yard, and the goal was grow the longest grass with a single seed. That's what the University of Cincinnati figured out, is they came up with a chemistry to grow a vertically aligned carbon nanotube that grew much longer than everybody else's. And so that caught the science community by surprise. National Science Foundation published this accomplishment that led to the Air Force, United States Air Force, specifically Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and the Air Force Research Lab, Advanced Materials and Materials and Manufacturing Directorate's interest. And they were looking for someone to spin off the technology from the university. And it just so happened that I had a relationship with the inventor and his family, and that led to a leap of faith.
You talked a little bit about the interest of NSF and folks there at Wright-Patt. And I know your company has been successful at winning government SBIR awards. Can you comment on the value of receiving this type of capital from the federal government?
I don't know the history of how the SBIR program came to be, but I will say the impact that it's had on us and what we've been able to do in terms of the government's return on investment, I don't know that we are the poster child for that system and how it operates, but I'd like to think that we've really done a nice job of a great ROI for the taxpayers. You know, we started out with a $100,000 seed, phase SBIR phase one, and, you needed $1 million in capital equipment just to do the work. And so one of the things that we believe in our business is, money is always accessible if it's justified. And, entrepreneurs and particularly researchers love nothing more but more time and more money. And it's easy and oftentimes an excuse to say, oh, I ran out of money. And so what the SBIR system has allowed us to do is really, really stay focused. We've never been driven by the love of technology. We've been more driven by the love of commercialization. And I like to think that the SBIR relationship that we've had, which has been among a variety of agencies, has really been something that's not just impacted us, but I think will prove to be a good return on investment for those investments that our country makes.
In addition to SBIR funding, you've been successful at raising venture capital. What is key to selling a high-tech idea to the financial community?
We raised some seed money early on in our business, but didn't really raise a more what they would call institutional round, a Series A round, until we were 6 years into the business. And that was because it took us that long to have a product that had enough customer feedback where we could legitimately say to the capital markets through validation that there was a, what we like to call a real there. And it wasn't for the sake of science, it was for the sake of impacting a need. So what we've communicated to our investors has been a very, very, very clear picture into the need of the market and how our technology impacts that need, but really having the voice of customer communicating part of that story is really what we've focused on. So they weren't just hearing it from us, they were hearing it from our customers and why they cared. And when we were able to synchronize that story based on validation, raising capital became something that was, again, not that it's easy, but it was very justified. And so we've been very fortunate to have strong, financial backing. But that's all been based off the technical merit and the customer need, and the linkage of those really is what's justified the financing.
So you discussed a little bit that you and your wife were ready for this type of opportunity, and one of the drivers was what you'd seen in generational poverty. Can you discuss the importance of having that support system, family, friends, mentors, collaborators in place before you take the plunge of becoming an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got their own story, right? And how they get to whatever career they're in, why they choose certain degrees that they study or where they end up, living. In our case, it wasn't a situation where this was some sort of foregone conclusion. It just happened to be, as I got to know my now wife and things we cared about, it was something that we were really committed to. And we like to say, and I say this jokingly, that she was cash flow and I was equity. She was very fortunate to have a wife that has a great career And so when we looked at our risk as a family to start the enterprise, we were able to make sure we were structured financially to take on that risk. But it was clearly a joint commitment. It wasn't a Joe being an entrepreneur with his hair on fire. It was 100% us together, and that's a lot of fun. Nobody likes to be in the foxhole alone. And that support staff is extended beyond just our internal family, but mentors, folks that have navigated these waters before, we've leaned on from the very beginning. And it's just, that's been really enjoyable. No matter what the outcome is, I know for sure we'll never regret the pursuit that we're taking.
So I've heard it said that being an entrepreneur is like jumping off a cliff and inventing a parachute on the way down. Does that resonate with you?
I think certain aspects of it do. Certainly you take the leap of faith. But a couple years ago, the Boeing company asked me to speak to a group of their engineers. I thought, well, what the heck do I have to offer? At the time we were a 5-person company. We've got 150,000 people, 50,000 engineers in that organization. And, part of that discussion, I had said, statistically, on average, something like 80% of small businesses fail. But I look at that and say, well, that means 20% have succeeded. And we just refuse to be the 80%. And so the parachute example that you're using, there's a lot of people that fly, that jump out of parachutes every day and have a heck of an experience. And so I think it's about perspective. Sure, it's not easy, but if it were easy, then it would have been done. So yeah, there's probably some truth to that analogy. But I like to look at that and say, what an exhilarating experience. Tremendous companies are built every day. And even though it is a little bit like jumping off the cliff, I wouldn't trade it. It's just something that we refuse to believe that a great business can't be built. And I think we're seeing the proof of that mentality now.
So one of the things that we're trying to do with this Nanotechnology Entrepreneurship Network is to share best practices and advice. What are some of the good advice that you received when you were just founding your company?
One of the things that comes to mind, there's been a long-term mentor of mine. He actually has zero background in technology or engineering or manufacturing or aerospace. He actually led a very large publicly traded insurance company. And early on in our business, I asked him, and he graciously agreed to lead a strategic planning session for us on a Saturday morning. And we were young in the business. And he said something then that is so true to this day. He said, you can't have product number two until you have product number one. In other words, what is the thing that is going to cement your business and put that stake in the ground that says we have a thing that the market desires? What he's really saying is focus. Really get to, how long is it going to take us to get to the thing that the market says we are willing to buy? And not that we're willing to buy it, we are anxious to buy it because we need it. So that was really good advice. You can't have product number two until you have product number one. Lock in and nail the thing because things build from that. I'm going to guess that Bill Boeing, when he started the Boeing company, didn't realize however many years later they'd be building a space shuttle. But they built the first thing, and that led to other things over time because of capability, knowledge, culture, talent, infrastructure, systems, all these other things emerged. I'm sure Amazon today, their business is a lot different than maybe what they initially thought it might look like over the course of time. I mean, that goes on and on and on. And so I think that was really good advice.
So we know that young companies have their ups and downs along the technology development pathway. Can you share a strategy or decision that you made that in hindsight you might have done differently?
So for the first 3 years of the business, our DoD customers cared a lot about the ability to convert the long nanotube material that we had into a high strength fiber. And I would say this if I were talking to our SBIR funders. What I didn't quite know is that our customer on the other end of that really loved research and the art of research. And if I could go back in time, I would have insisted that we have someone that was a little bit closer to the end product use as opposed to the art of research. They were intrigued by certain data on how the nanotubes grew, some of the chemistries, but there was never a real What is the thing that ultimately someone's going to buy, and why do we care about this? And so one of my cautions to entrepreneurs, I guess, is, and this is one of the reasons that we've had such a great relationship, I think, with Boeing. Our business is not run by a technologist. I am not a technologist. I'm not in love with the technology. I'm in love with ultimately addressing a problem that the market wants and needs. So I would have insisted, I think, earlier on in our early stage R&D, that the end user be at the table, not just the researcher that's interested in the research on the other end. Because otherwise, you can really, what we call, chase a ghost. And we did that for about 3 years. And it was a really painful lesson. So having that end user, now you might say, well, sure, the end user is there, the Air Force is there, but not really. You know, at the end of the day, who is the customer that's making the decision? Well, you know, the customer is making the decision. Typically the OEM, they've got the contract to build the vehicle or whatever it is to meet the requirements that the customer defines. But we did not have any OEM or anybody in the supply chain at the table. And so that was a really, really key thing that if I could go back in time, I would have not just the researcher on the other end who was our customer, but really the end user, which of course we've learned that lesson and we've moved beyond that. But that's a key thing that we have certainly learned in spades, at least early on in the business.
So from your perspective, what are some of the essential skills that are required to be an entrepreneur?
Well, in my mind, the number one thing is the interface with the market. What are the needs? Why should someone care about what we're doing? And our ability to take their interest and guide our behaviors. So to share a quick story, the first 3 years in the business was all around a fiber type format of the nanomaterial. And along the way, when we started interfacing with the end users, it became apparent that they wanted our product, but in a broad good format, more of a roll, stock, or sheet type material system. And I say that because I recall coming back, actually we were at a nanomaterials meeting in Washington, D.C. that was based at NASA. It was a sort of a technology exchange. And I remember getting on the plane and coming home and the next day walking into our engineering team and saying, stop what we're doing on anything fiber. We got to make a broad good product because this is the material form that integrates well in aerospace composites. And here's, you know, blah, 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 a number of reasons why. And I bring that up because that to me was a real critical decision. The ability to what they call sometimes pivot in the entrepreneur case, we certainly did that. We literally stopped on a dime what we were doing because we felt like at the end of the day, what we were building was going to continue to be a great R&D project, but that was not what was going to keep the lights on. And so that to me is a real learning lesson and something that we use in our story all the time is that pivot and the ability to lock in again on the mentality of you can't have product number two until you have product number one.
So Joe, I just want to thank you again for, you know, taking the time to share your story and provide advice to those that are interested in nano entrepreneurship. Do you have any closing thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners?
I know that the pursuit sometimes of a dream is hard. It's well worth it. The one advice that I would at least communicate is there's nothing more satisfying than when the end user on the other end is really, 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 really happy. And they truly believe that if not for what you're delivering, their outcome would not be as great. You know, there was a time when probably if we went out of business, other than our employees and other than our investors and our stakeholders, not too many people would probably care. I mean, it would be a nice job. Congratulations for trying. But I think that's different today. I think if Velo Technologies shut down tomorrow, there would be a number of customers that would say our systems are going to be at some disadvantage because we can no longer address the capabilities or requirements that now Velo's products can deliver. And I would just encourage any entrepreneur to keep that in mind, that that's really a satisfying moment because that's when growth happens. And that's when culture really gets to another level. Is when our team sees how their innovation impacts our customers. And that to me is something that I think even in its darkest days as an entrepreneur, when things can be challenging, pursuing that moment of that feedback that says, this is special, this is going to get us to the next level of capability, it's worth all the effort to really achieve that moment, in my opinion.
Thank you for joining us for this inaugural Nano Entrepreneurship Network podcast. If you'd like to get involved, please email us at nen@nnco.nano.gov or visit nano.gov/nanoentrepreneurshipnetwork and join the conversation.